Grab a seat. It's time for the Cool Table Podcast. Good evening. Welcome to a hangout of witches. I'm Beth. This is the Cool Table, and we are so glad that you're here. Tonight we have some new faces. If you haven't seen them before, I want to say hi to everybody. Heidi, say hello.
Hey, it's Heidi here. Let's do this. How about you, Courtney?
I'm Courtney. I have wine. I have lots to say about Marcus and his choice in music and being scared of someone telling you that they're a vampire.
Andy, say hello.
Hi, I'm so excited to be doing this episode. Stephen Cree tweeted me today.
On purpose?
Yeah, it was weird. So my friend Jamie was like, he doesn't look like Gala Glass to me. And that's what he responded to. Well, she just said he wasn't like really tall. And she was like, I love Stephen Cree. She's like, but he's just not tall enough. He's not like how I pictured Gala Glass. And he was like, I'm 5'10", 5'11", in heels. And we were like, mortified.
Was he tagged in it?
No, we did not.
Oh, no, he's vanity searching. He's looking for that Gala Glass good stuff. Finding it.
That's pretty bad. I was also like, forget Gala Glass. I like Marcus.
Oh, he's out here vanity searching for himself. Stephen Cree, I thought you were cooler than that. I was mistaken. But yeah, I tweeted Stephen Cree once from the Cool Table, and I don't remember what it was. I think it was one of the first stills of his that came out, and a bunch of people were talking about it, and I said, gag me, Gala Glass, and he responded to that. So he's really into people finding him hot or not. That's his brand. So let's talk about it. Episode 4 takes place fully in the present time. Emma just said vampires don't give a shit about COVID. That's very true. COVID is not a part of this world, which I'm very glad to hear.
God.
Also, COVID wasn't a thing when they filmed it, so they would have had to been very
pressured. True. I didn't even think about that.
Speaking of filming, just as a side note from this episode, they're like a week away from being finished filming season 3.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So that is like coming down the pike really quickly.
Is it going to be the last season in correspondence with the books, or are they going to try to drag it out?
Yeah, it's the last season.
Really?
Yeah.
But she's right. I mean, there are 2 more books. Like, they could drag it out.
Don't beat a dead horse like Outlander.
But not 2 books in this trilogy.
No, but I mean, they are definitely.
You just want to see the Marcus story.
I do. I really just want to see the Marcus story.
The Marcus story is Times Convert, right?
It's such a good book.
No, they don't. She hasn't sold the rights to Times Convert. So even if they wanted to make it, it would take a really long time to do all the contracts and get all of that done. So it wouldn't be something they would jump right into, and probably not even something they could jump into with the same cast, right? Because you're contracted to what you're doing. So is she writing books that go beyond Book of Life that are Matthew and Diana books?
She said she was.
What are they going to be about? Like, they're just going to have adventures? It's going to be adventure a day with Matthew and Diana?
Their growing family.
What growing family, Courtney?
Brett says, I haven't read Times Convert, thought the reviews weren't as good. And I will explain this. Even though I haven't read Times Convert, here's why. Book readers, especially book readers of things like this, are very particular types of people. And most of them are pieces of shit. And when you pick up a trilogy that has a central love story and you take that story and you spin it off into something else, they don't give a shit. They don't want to read about those people. They aren't interested in what you have to say about that. If you gave them a free anthology of the entire world that was 8 million pages long with 1,500 side stories, but it didn't have the main characters from the original trilogy having sex, they would give it bad reviews. So that's where the Times Convert bad reviews come from.
Is that how you feel about the Fever series?
No, actually. I really like the rest of her books. I do really like Barons, but it doesn't bother me that there are books that like Danny's that hadn't like the lead or whatever. You don't like Danny?
I can't stand her.
A lot of people don't like Danny, and part of it's because she's so young, but when she ages up, it's good.
It is good. It's good. Yeah.
Anywho, so that's what I think about Times Convert. Lachey just said, I didn't like Times Convert as much, but I did like it. So Lachey's not a piece of shit reader. So and there's also...
Oh, Lachey!
There's also the view, you know, it may just not be as good a book. But, you know, there I would think that in general, the reviews are, this is not about Matthew and Diana. I don't like it. That's just my feeling. But neither was this episode. Segue into episode 4. No Matthew and Diana in this episode, but did we like it? Yays or nays?
Yes. Loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I watched it with my husband and like he could watch it without asking as many questions.
And I'm less invested in the modern time stuff than I am in the past time stuff. As a non-book reader, like I was like, why are we, I don't care about Marcus. And I know that's going to be sacrilege to some people, but like, I don't get it.
So did you not like this episode? Because
I mean, I liked it fine because I think it's leading to something, but it wasn't like I didn't need that extra layer of modern storytelling.
I mean, I really loved it. I thought it was so good. I mean, and I liked seeing Isabel. I was like, why can't I remember her name right now? I like her. And I really like Marcus. Like everybody else is like, Calglass. And I'm like, no, Marcus, please bring it on. And I thought he was so good in this episode too. So I was really excited.
I thought he was wonderful in this episode for sure.
He's so good. He played the part so well. That's exactly how I would anticipate Marcus to act in real life.
He was very smirky McSmirker stuff.
Oh, so yeah, smirky. Totally. And I loved it. That like British smirky dryness. I'll take it all day long.
Which is weird because he's American.
I know, but like the play, yeah.
Shane just said his reactions were spot on. I thought he was doing a super good job. I mean, it's obviously a bigger episode for Edward Blumel and Marcus in general because one, he's carrying it. And two, he learns a lot in this episode and kind of, you know, has his own love story going on, which was super sped up from how it happens in the book. But of course it was. I mean, you cannot spread out a secondary love story in a 10 episode season in a time, you know, like they couldn't wait. It's not like they could have waited a day.
Yeah, but I wasn't mad about it.
No, I didn't think it felt awkward or weird. Like when they were like, let's do this, I was like, yeah, I would have done that too, girl. I loved her too.
I liked the idea that she kissed him, got in a cab, left, Googled him, stopped the cab. It was like, I'm gonna call this guy back. So I really liked the fact that it looked like it was just gonna go like a regular date, and then she ended up in bed with him. I liked it.
Although, getting back to them ending up in bed together, isn't that not supposed to happen? I was like, wait, are we back to this sex, but they're not supposed to be having sex again? Like, right?
Mm. That's Twilight. They can have sex.
Can they?
Yes.
Matthew can't have sex with Diana.
Yeah.
Because of the mating aspect of it, is my assumption.
I guess I just don't remember them having sex in the book. I thought it was the same way for the two of them that it was for Matthew and Diana.
No, because I remember, well, even in Times Convert, she talks a lot in that about flashing back about their sexual relationship before the events of that book.
I'll take your word for it. I don't remember.
She was very nosy. That's all I have to say about her. Like, who goes home with a guy for the first time, has no idea there's at least two other people in that house? Like, she has no idea there's a pregnant lady and another man in that house. Perfect lingerie camisole that she like threw in her purse real fast before she called him up, which I mean, I guess that was good planning. And then she's just like, I feel like having a snack. I'm going to go downstairs and peruse this guy's refrigerator. I'm going to look at this random box on his thing and open it.
But the box opening was after she found the pint of blood. And don't tell me if
I would have run screaming.
Well, leave the house. I'm like, what is going on? I would have gone through more of the drawers. I would have been like trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
No, the fact that she stayed there and went through his stuff made me think that she was a creature of some sort. Like, it made me think that I couldn't trust her as someone who hasn't read the books.
Because like she asked him, are you sick? I would have thought the same thing. Is he sick? Because everything pointed to there is something weird about him.
Lachey and Shane are both saying, how did Marcus not hear her snooping? My headcanon about that was that he kind of, you know, I think he, I can't think of a not a weird way to say this. I think he nutted and then fell asleep. Like, he was just being a dude. And like, they don't sleep very much, but maybe he's like super relaxed. And so he got like a little bit of vampire sleep. What bugged me about it is she finds a blood bag in his mini fridge, which why he doesn't have a full fridge in his townhouse, I don't know. He's a doctor. Why does he not have a good lie for that? Like, there's a pregnant woman living here. That's in case something happens. She's planning on having a home birth. I mean, that would have been, it was literally at the tip of my tongue.
But that's why I think he wanted her to find it. And he wanted to tell her.
Yeah, because he just so readily was like, I'm a vampire. Mm-hmm. You're like, you met her yesterday.
But they have that spidey sense going on and they know when, I don't know.
Okay, maybe. But yeah, she works at a place where his item he was trying to buy literally got stolen and a guard got ripped apart. He invites this girl back to his house. She knows everything about him. He's like, hey, you got me. I'm a vampire. After hundreds of years of secrecy. I just do not get it.
When you find the one.
Okay. Well,
but she didn't know that the guard got ripped apart.
No, she just knew he was missing.
No, but he knows that.
He knows.
So why would he trust her? I guess because he knows she's not a creature.
And he knows it has to do with Javert.
Yeah.
But did they never hire humans? They never hire humans to infiltrate. I mean, come on. They're like the...
I agree with you. Like, I think that if you're not a book reader, yes, watching Phoebe come into his life in this way, being as kind of reserved as she is, and yet helping him out and then going on the date. And she's also pushy enough, mm-hmm. even on the date, like to just be like, oh, so hot and cold is her thing. Like, good for her.
Yeah.
I think that there is a trajectory that if you're watching this, you're thinking, what is her deal? Yes, there's got to be more going on than this is just a very sweet person that he met at this auction house.
I loved when he had to leave dinner to call his grandmother, but he saw the other guy and she's like, that's fine. I'll just sit here and drink my gin.
And it was like a wine glass full of gin.
Oh, it was fantastic. I was like, yes, and order another because he's going to be forever. Let's do it.
Do people drink gin like that? Is that a thing people do? Like in a
in Europe.
Yes.
Yep. Wow.
I went to a gin bar for a boozy tea when I was in London last year, and it's a whole ass goblet full of gin.
Yeah. And wow. I ate at a restaurant that had a gin bar in Edinburgh, and same thing.
Yeah. So Shane asked, for a vampire, do they immediately mate like the wolves in Twilight? So he knew he was mated, but she hasn't figured it out. No, they don't in this series, like immediately mate. Matthew doesn't know that Diana's his mate when he meets her. There's no, you know, imprintation or whatever. And it takes a minute. So, I mean, yeah, he could be having like pants feelings for her or something like that. But to give her the keys to the kingdom right at the beginning is very, very odd. Also, why does he keep a box of his old photos?
It's weird.
It's a huge townhouse. Like, find another fridge to keep blood in. Like, I don't know.
That house was amazing, though. That house was really amazing.
Especially the room that they were in when Miriam was there, who unfortunately was in half of a scene. Like, utilize Miriam more, please. I enjoy her perfect eyeliner. That room with its perfect, like, slate blue.
So pretty.
Wood trim and then that camel-covered sofa. I was like, and I also thought that Sophie was strangely weird in that scene.
So weird.
When they were talking about how she had to give birth at the hospital, she was just...
They didn't discuss... Did they discuss them living with Marcus at the end of last season? Like, was that a discussion that was going to...
I don't remember that.
Yeah, me either.
Oh, maybe I'm cross the book in the show I'm crossing, but I remember it's similar to her aunt's going to live at Sator for their safety. They need to be hidden away.
But if he's been a doctor for like hundreds of years, I mean, is he a specialist? At this point?
I didn't understand that either.
He's not a doctor. He doesn't have all that stuff at his house, all the equipment ready to go.
I mean, I feel like they could probably work that out. He had $200,000 to drop on those. What was it that Molly said last week? Ye old Walgreens photos. Like, he just had the money. Like, he can buy some equipment for a quick up NICU setup.
Speaking of those photos, I also, like, they got stolen. And she was like, sorry, you just spent $100,000 on these. They're stolen. My bad. And then he's like, I'm so disappointed. I was like.
It's very weird that he asks her out at that point.
But there was, like, the underlying flirtation going on.
I mean, no, I get that they were flirting with one another. The whole time. I mean, she was like, yeah, come back to my office from the very beginning. It's fine. Like, they're flirting. But also, like, the thing he needed to go get is gone. It's the only thing gone.
He wasn't even that stressed about it. Like, he was not even that stressed.
He probably like has been there, done that, has the t-shirt, and he's just like, okay, we'll figure it out.
Emma just said, isn't the point of the paintings just to be a calling card to the family that they made it back in time and that they're okay? Yes, but it's not just they made it and they're okay. As the head of the Knights of Lazarus, he has to be actively finding anything in the past that proves Matthew and Diana are there and confiscating it so that it doesn't get out in the world.
Yeah. Is that because they're trying to protect them from getting caught by the congregation, or is that?
And also I think because they're previewing what's going to happen and saying, we need to be in control of what this is. Mm-hmm. We need to be the ones who control this information. This mm-hmm. is not knowledge that needs to be out in the world. It's knowledge that we need to contain.
They did like a Google search alert on it. He was like, oh, I have like an internet alert. And I was like, no one in the congregation thought, I know, Google alert. Look for these people. Like, why didn't they find it?
Probably because they don't know where they are. They could be in the future.
Okay.
They could be in the past.
Internet's really shitty in Venice too.
Those pictures were in really good shape. They were not old.
Amazing shape.
The carbon dating system on that just gotten right down. But I think also like Matthew let Marcus and them know, we're going back to a certain time. I'm going to be Matthew Royden. This is, you know, his Google search was narrow, whereas the congregation has no idea, you know, or where they are, or what they're doing, and wouldn't know where to begin to look. But it's also part of the reason that they're trying to get all of that information. They need to be the ones that are controlling it and controlling it for themselves. I mean, I think that in the grand scheme of how time travel works, Matthew's going to have some issues with being a man out of place at a certain time, meeting people who have seen him as someone else who he is in the future and have to keep that from him. So there's already secrets in their life regarding this time period.
Before we move past the whole him telling her he's a vampire thing, I was talking with one of my best friends who also watched the show. And remember she was like, when he told her, when they went on their walk, and I texted her, I was like, I feel like in college we met people with much crazier stories and we were still like, oh, it's cool.
Time out. She's an educated person who works in the history field, and a very cute but also a little too smirky guy just told her that he's a vampire. A few pictures and a blood bag and having a sketchy personality is not enough for a normal human being.
He's so charming though.
Absolutely not. A normal person would be like, you're fucking crazy. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Like, I would have snapped a picture of him and put him all over the internet. Like, be careful, ladies. This guy wants to eat your blood and parts of your body.
Excuse me. I would be army hammering that guy. Into the sun. Nobody needs that shit in real life. And I don't disagree with her for walking away. I'll be more disappointed when she eventually, inevitably comes back. Also, it's very weird. And I get that there's like reasons that Deb Harkness did this. It's very weird that the three creatures that exist in this world are vampires, witches, and demons, and not, you know, fairies or werewolves. Why a demon when it doesn't have the lore? It doesn't have the Christian connotation.
It's because she wanted a creature that would be her as an intelligent historian. This whole book is autobiographical, and I'm fine with it, but that's what it was. Like, I would be like, she's like, yeah, no, you know what? I don't have power, so I would be a demon, a very smart person who knows a lot about Ron D or whatever that guy's name was last episode.
Jana just said, I feel like Marcus could have done a cool vampire trick to prove it.
Yes, Jana.
It's like pulling a tree and being like, you can never fight me off. Like, something like that.
Run around her a couple of times.
Yeah. Showed her how sparkly his chest is. I mean, if Marcus had done a vampire trick at that point, it would have been full on Twilight. In fact, I was actually really impressed. Like, her conversation at that point is nothing to the level of Bella and Edward conversation. And I was very thankful that they were able to actually like circumvent those tropes in an interesting way in that moment, because it could have been not good.
And are you telling me we're not going to see the spider monkey like climb a tree later? We're not going to get that?
Amazingly enough, we've gotten none of that. Matthew hasn't done any vampire-y stuff with Diana.
Matthew would have been the one who did it if anyone did it.
But I mean, there's so many other creatures. Where are the Silkies? Janet said, yeah. Where are the Harpies? Where are the Titans? Why not? You know, why is it
leprechauns? Leprechauns.
I don't get it.
I wonder if it was like lore that existed in like the 15th century or like, I wonder if there's some weird tie back to that.
But let's talk about Sarah and M. I still love their relationship. Mm-hmm. I still love everything about when they're on screen together. I wish they got a little bit more screen time. I know not everybody agrees with that, but I really like it. What do we think about M's summoning?
Any time, any book or anything, it always, whenever you start mixing the living with the dead and trying to conjure the dead, it's not good news.
It reminded me of the head on the Haunted Mansion ride at Disney World.
I don't think it seems like a decent plan. We need to connect to the Book of Life. So let's summon a dead person who might have seen it. It seems like a stupid way to go.
Well, and clearly how desperate the one was, so insistent on the other one not do it. Please don't do it because of what happened last time.
Yeah.
We don't really know in depth what happened last time. We just know she was young in her craft, but still it had to be something that she was so desperate and like on the verge of tears, begging her not to do it.
Yeah, I wonder what happened before. Emma just said, I love the filming of that ceremony. Mm-hmm. She's mesmerizing. Her movements are poetry. Like, I love the way it looks. I love the burning of the sage. I love, like, all the candles coming up and everything being...
The choreography of it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a gorgeous little thing. I'm just also like, I don't think that's really going to work very well. Especially because it's like, she gets a bad connection every time. Like, you really need to dive into what the Book of Life is. You're not going to have enough time to chat about it.
Did she explain, or did I miss where she explained why they were conjuring Rebecca and not Stephen, who probably has more information?
I didn't understand that.
I don't think she has any control over who she's summoning. Rebecca's the one who answered the phone, basically.
And because she assumed that Rebecca might know if Stephen knew enough, like he might have told her. She mentioned that. So I guess maybe she was just hoping either of them would be able to give them just an inkling of information to help them.
And we've seen their bodies, right? They're like, Stephen's for sure dead. It's not that he's like alive somewhere else. Like we've seen his, at least in that one photo, there's a picture of them both.
Yeah,
dead.
That's it.
Okay.
But they're dead. They're dead.
It did kind of remind me of Harry Potter when his parents come in the graveyard at Voldemort and they're like, we can only hold on for a little bit, you know. Brett said, I read the book a while ago, but I feel like the scrying and the higher magic M delves into was not very clear. Potentially, yeah. Emma, Sarah's always the foil to M. I wish she'd have a more active role in supporting Diane and Matthew rather than coming off as the nag.
Except she wants to leave also. She wants to leave Septuor. I'm like, that's not a good idea. No. Like, every idea the two of them have is, like, dumber than the last idea. I don't know. I really love them, too. But they don't seem very bright.
That's true. M seems bright, emotionally intelligent. Whereas Sarah just seems very scattered and very... You know,
Sarah like was commenting on like, oh, you got to hold on to that vampire. She can cook. And then she was like, that was all of her comments was like that. And like, I'm a grown woman. I can leave if I want. Like there's bigger things happening right now, Sarah. Stay where you are.
I mean, is it just bad writing? I don't remember in the book what Sarah's supposed to be doing.
Being the worry wart, going through the libraries during the day. Looking for clues.
I like that she's like earthy and homey and like more of like a home witch. Like she's into the cooking and like the soil and that kind of thing. I think that's interesting, but they're not letting her be more. It feels like she's playing off as like this harpy housewife rather than like a powerful witch.
Or even just the idea that like Isabeau tells them they have to stay inside. And I really thought in that moment they were going to be like, but our connection to the earth is what allows us to have any kind of power. If we're going to connect with them, if we're going to figure any of this out, we need to be able to have our hands in the soil or something like that. And nothing.
Are they earth witches? Is that a thing? Like, is that their...
I think so because she does spells.
Okay.
Which I think means that you're earth. Emma just said, I'd love a scene where Sarah shows us her power, which I agree. Like, she seems very impotent. She's just, like, pulverizing some herbs, some rosemary at some point. That's it. She's doing nothing else. So it would be nice if she had some usefulness. Shelley said, Sarah was worse in the book. Maybe it's just Alice... Kingston's acting that's the difference, but I really didn't like Sarah in the book. I don't really remember having much of an opinion about Sarah. She just comes off as kind of a bit of a plot device in my memory of having when I read them. I like them in the show. I think that they offer a little bit of something that we're not getting otherwise, which is what witch world is like, because Diana's outside of it. All of them, none of the witches seem to have like a coherent culture. Mm-hmm. the vampires are wealthy and powerful and kind of controlling things and moving pieces and playing chess. And the demons are like just being them their creative selves, even though we have very few of them. I feel like the witch culture is non-existent. More witches in A Discovery of Witches, please.
Also because all of the witches in the first season were like out to get her. You right. know what yeah. I mean? So like you don't have a good experience other than Sarah and Em. There's that's it as far as the witches go that we have a good experience with and in the past.
So let's talk about the other vampires in this episode. Gerbert comes in being a bit of a badass. Like I'm kind of not afraid of Gerbert, but I also kind of want him to win a little bit. Like, I think he kind of deserves, other than like keeping that witch under his power for a couple thousand years, I feel like he deserves a little something.
He's playing the game very well. Like, he is a master chess player.
As a non-book reader, I don't understand why the de Clermonts need to be in charge. Like, what is it about them that is so noble and so wonderful that they're the only ones who can do it right?
I think that's part of the complexity of the plot when you're reading the books is that they don't always do it right and they aren't fully noble. And so it's not that they deserve it more or whatever. It's just that they've been better at retaining power. Mm. And that is sometimes through noble means and sometimes not. So like when Marcus is discussing what is it that the knights have been doing all of this time, he isn't wrong. Yeah, sure, they helped fight the Nazis, you know, but then so did a lot of other people. They have the complexity that anybody might have. And yet don't have some of the narcissistic problems that people that have had power for a really long time do. So I guess they're more worried that if someone like Peter Knox or Gerbert come in power, they don't have as many checks and balances on them as the de Clermont family because the family keeps themselves in check. They have loyalty to each other.
But what does Gerbert want? Like, what is his ultimate goal? Just power?
Okay. And to see the de Clermonts fail.
Okay. Essentially, he's just there to be the bad guy.
Okay.
And Peter Knox in the same way. And then, of course, their species are having kind of an existential crisis, power failing in the witches and demons, you know, increasingly like not churning out good stuff, I guess. There's no more Mozarts. So I think, you know, there's just like a little bit of a decline and the vampires are not siring. And so they're just trying to kind of figure out what to do. The Book of Life feels like the next big key to power.
But also, if it hasn't been seen in so long, it's not at the forefront. I mean, if you've lived for 1,000 years and you're like, oh, there was that thing, but I haven't seen it for 1,000 years. And then all of a sudden, like one witch comes and is like, I found this book. And you're like, what the?
Shane just said Amanda Gorman would be a demon. And like, I literally thought that when I was saying there's no more Mozarts. Sure. I was like, unless you're Amanda Gorman, like she qualifies. Yeah. Okay. So Isabeau, I think, was great in this episode. Because she's showing some of what that power is about. She tells Gerbert very specifically, what do you know about love? And that's kind of the material point. The de Clermonts represent a group of people who have connections to other people, who love one another, and who do things for that love. And Gerbert is just there, out there for himself.
The loyalty is extreme in that family, but not because it's forced.
Okay, but Matthew has blood rage?
Yes.
Did we know that this whole time?
No.
No, you just found out.
He doesn't seem to have blood rage, guys.
So, okay, if you put together, which again, I don't think the show does a great job of this, but if you put together little bitty things that have happened or been said in season one and then this season. So when Hamish tells him you're craving her, and when he says what happened the last time you fell in love with a warm blood, Matthew really trying to get her to leave him alone and trying to stay away from being mated to her is not just related to him being vampiric, because obviously based on what Marcus is doing with his life and whatever, like they can have regular relationships with people, which he didn't really know, but like, it's not just that he's a vampire. It's that he's a vampire afflicted with blood rage. Then of course, in this season, we've seen him 2 times, I think, get really like fucked in the face, like get really upset when he's with Kit and his like eyes are freaking out. Like he's really upset. It's like coming to the forefront.
Next episode, it'll start to come more to the forefront because a character is introduced that also has the blood rage.
Yeah. They show Louisa and Philippe both.
I thought that was Mary Sidley the whole time.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay.
It's Matthew's sister, Louisa.
Oh, sure. She did say it was her brother. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kit warns Diana too about Matthew mm-hmm. being like, oh, this is not the one you know. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. And Galaglass is always is warning her too. Like Haymitch warns her, like they're warning her, like he'll lose himself. We talked about that last week. Like how
that makes more sense. That. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. Everybody's always saying it. And you're like, okay, dude, like I get it. He'll lose himself if I'm not there to hold his hand or whatever. I mean, I think that the blood rage demon guy that's doing this in Oxford, that's going to hopefully bring that to, you know, full circle, but potentially not. But there is somebody that we're going to meet in the past also who has blood rage. You're going to see, you know, a little bit more about what that does. I forgot about it being an affliction through Isabeau's bloodline and it being mm-hmm. something that Marcus and Isabeau have and are carriers for. And I thought it was interesting. This is the thing I had to explain to my husband this week, is that Matthew had culled Marcus's sires, I guess, all throughout his existence. Every time so he doesn't have any children.
But would Marcus not know that he had blood rage? Like everyone else is warning her, like, hey, you don't know, he's controlled it the whole time that Marcus has been alive. Is that
I think when he gets afflicted with it, he kind of okay. goes away.
But Marcus also for a time goes away, like does his own thing.
He pulls an Edward Cullen.
He does. He goes to New Orleans. And that's where the majority of his sires are when they have to go pull them.
Mm. Dawn just said, well, we find out who's doing the killings in the present time. Shane asked who is doing it. I've only seen this 7 episodes. I haven't seen all 10. So I don't know if we ever find out who does it.
That's not a book thing?
I don't think so.
Mm-mm. Oh, okay. Because you guys, I have tricked myself out so much that I convinced myself that was Galaglass doing that this whole time. So, okay. That's interesting. Thank you.
I don't know why I just assumed that whoever has the blood rage in the past is the one doing it now.
I do too. Whoever did it in the past, which we do meet someone who's doing it in the past, is also the person who stole the miniatures, has some sort of like reason to be doing all of this in this moment in Oxford of all places. So if they don't pull all that together, I'll be very disappointed.
I can see them doing that because of some other characters who will be pulled back in the fold later.
Isabeau mentioned to Diana that Matthew had early feeding frenzies and Philippe sheltered her from it. So there's a lot of background between Philippe and Isabeau and Matthew and what their relationship was like and what went on with all of that.
I have a question about the brother who came in and wanted to take over the Knights of Lazarus. Was he kicked off the congregation or is he wanting to do both?
Yeah, he's still on the congregation.
He just wants like a total power takeover. He wants to take over both branches of government.
Yeah. He doesn't really see a point in Marcus doing it, which, I mean, if you look at Marcus's personality, like, yeah, why are you the Knights of Lazarus?
And also he feels like he has the lineage over Marcus.
Well, Baldwin's not wrong in that Marcus found out that the miniatures were missing and like went to dinner with the with the lady. So
can I just say my favorite Marcus moment the entire episode was when Isabeau was like, well, then I guess you're going to have to kill her. And he was just like, it was so funny when he looked like a whip puppy.
Yeah.
That was my response. Like, why'd you just tell her? Now she has to die.
It's not like them mating with people of other species is a normal everyday occurrence. And it's not in anywhere in Isabeau's mind that Marcus is thinking he's going to mate with this woman he just met. So in her mind, she's like, well, you know, bye.
Isabeau's not even a fan of the witches. Like what makes anything that's not a vampire.
Imagine Christmas.
But that's okay. But that's what I'm saying. She apparently has some blood-raged daughter who's Matthew's sister, uh-huh. and then all these other people. And then she just, like, why is she a safe place for Em and Sarah? I feel like those people could just walk into their childhood home.
I mean, they have gotten the blood rage. It's not, like, running around.
Okay.
Still being a problem.
No, but it is. It's running around in Oxford right now.
Right. Yes. All right. This was a great episode, you guys. I really enjoyed it. I like the fact that they went back and took an entire episode to tell us some stuff that was going on in the present. I think with a little bit more skill, it would have been interesting to see the miniatures being made or being given to Jack at the same time that Marcus is looking for them and finding them at an auction house. I think it would have taken slightly more skilled writer's room to do that.
It would have been easy to have piece it into the last episode of him meeting Phoebe and maybe this episode that they're like in love or whatever is happening with the miniatures. Like if they could have been weaved in between the two, between past and present.
It definitely wouldn't have felt as fast.
Yeah.
Right. And the miniatures in last week were so dumb. So just handing them to Jack and be like, we got these made for you, and that we barely know you. And like, they never showed them getting them made. It would have been something they would have had to sit for, we talked about this last week. Like, when did they sit for miniatures amidst all of the stuff that they've been doing? And so it would have been cool if it had been something that they showed happening as they're showing Marcus, like looking for something in the past. And then as those miniatures get completed, then Marcus has the Google search, right? Then
it pops up. That would have been fun.
Again.
You write this.
It's not hard to call me and put me in your writer's room. See how easy I came up with that?
That would have been a great look at their like normal life in 15th century.
Did anyone else wonder how a street urchin 10-year-old kept those miniatures safe for more than 10 minutes?
Look, I have a 10-year-old. She holds on to the most random things.
Yeah, and I mean, my daughter has rocks.
Yes.
From 2008. Oh, yes,
we have rocks.
Are we going to see this, the statue that the demon girl gave to Diana soon?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, what a waste. Chekhov's gun that shit. All right, you guys, we will see you next week. We may not be the chess piece, but we are the miniatures. We will be here next week.
The Cool Table Podcast is produced and edited by me, Beth Thorne. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at B.E. Thorne. A Hangout of Witches is a live event hosted right here at the Cool Table every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Join us live this Sunday to be part of the conversation by visiting our YouTube channel or Facebook page. Those links are in the show notes. Content support is provided by the co-founders of The Cool Table. Find out more about who we are at thecooltable.com/who we are. Music is provided by Autolus. Use our discount code COOLTABLE15 for 15% off subscriptions and single song licenses. Autolus. Discover an individualized music licensing experience at autolus.com. As always, follow our entertainment coverage, book reviews, and pop culture rants at thecooltable.com.